Blog Talk Radio.
Up this morning, looking for my shoes. Look behind the trunk, found the hesitation blues. Lordy, tell me how long.
Lordy, tell me how long.
Will I have to wait?
Will I have to wait?
Can I get you now?
Can I get you now?
Must I hesitate? Tell me how long.
Lordy, tell me how long.
Will I have to wait?
Will I have to wait?
Can I get you now?
Can I get you now?
Must I hesitate?
Cool. Awesome. Yeah, I've been a
subscriber to his channel for about 3.5 years, so he's got some good stuff on there.
Yeah, he does, and he's funny. He's, and you know, one thing he did say, please don't talk politics, and we don't talk politics here. So,
no.
Nicholas Garbowski.
Oh, yeah.
So those are a few shows that we're working on, and we're hoping to get Jason Hignite on the show, who's doing a lot of great things right now, and we're going to keep developing these shows and keep them going. Because our numbers are extremely high, and we're really excited about this. Nick, what's going on with Black Patriot Books?
Oh, well, hey, everybody. Got a few announcements to make before we really kick things off. We just published the new Days of the Dead anthology, even though the Las Vegas convention next weekend has been postponed until June, which was a great idea. I was waiting for them to do that because a lot of the celebrities were pulling out and everything, and because of the climate of, everything going on and such, it's just a good idea. But at the same time, though, the book must go on. So Nevada Necromance, the second in our Days of the Dead anthology series, is out this weekend. So it's out on our website, blackbedsheetbooks.com, and also Amazon, going to be popping up at Barnes & Noble and all around, everywhere books are sold. So that, and with that said, we've got some new ones that are coming out before the end of the month, like L.A. Nance's Incubus Succubus, which has been a long time coming. And also, Raina Young has a cool women's horror anthology that is coming up before the end of the month. It's being edited right now, and that is groovy cool. And then also we got Rochelle Dillon, the author of the short Bonesai, the story about the Godzilla penis. She is coming out with a whole novel called I'm going to leave it as a surprise this week. So you got to like pay attention to our group page on Facebook, Black Bedsheet Books, and also our official page. More people pay more attention to the group page than the official page, of course, but that's great because our group page is more interactive. Just got over 900 members just the other day, just over 900, trying to reach for 1,000 and beyond. On the other hand, you know, there's this thing on Facebook. One author, not one of our authors yet, but an author, messaged me earlier today, and I get messages like this from writers all the time, and it has a lot to do with how they're a little bit disillusioned about social media and about promoting their books and everything because they're relatively young. They don't really they haven't really got their foot into everything, and they are so promotional about their stuff and so aggressive that the lack of response makes them feel like makes them feel insecure and angry. And I rarely do this, but without giving away who it is, I want to read what I sent to them just about an hour ago. And it might be inspirational to the listeners. And it goes something like this. I have a radical idea that you may or may not agree with, but it has always worked for me. And if you disagree, that's perfectly A-OK. Our writing is important to us and important to us for others to read. We don't want to just write stuff, whether blogs or books or poetry or whatever, and keep it all in a closet. You have your books, you have your blog, you have your this, and desire to be published and have more and more people read what you write and actually dig it. Therefore, you must be patient and tolerant and courteous, especially with the assholes. You don't want to make enemies who can spread negativity around about you because you reacted in the same way you feel they did to you. It's really a golden rule all around, no matter what your profession, because if you react with love, it helps make for a better world. Inwardly, it's okay to be frustrated when you're trying to get your work and voice noticed, and I've seen so many authors get so desperate at the lack of positive response to their works that they get disillusioned, angry, and because of that, they butt heads with so many people in social media. The answer to your being so pissed off lies from within, and you must reevaluate that and learn to respect and tolerate others in the kind of way you want them to do for you, even if they don't. I'm not telling you to kiss ass. I'm advising you to promote kindness. Your blogs and books and work, and you are worth it. Build a positive response. Build a positive response and a positive reputation. Social media is not a contest, and neither is life. It takes a while, but you'll find that how you handle things makes all the difference. It's not about them. It's about you. So I thought that that was really cool. And, you know, and that is really important for people to understand, too, especially people just starting out in the industry with trying to get their works out and such and everything. The lack of response and it, you just have to have patience and you have to build yourself and approach people with kindness and stuff. I mean, I've learned that over and over and over again. It's like sometimes keep some of your opinions to yourself and just promote the kindness and encourage people instead of butting heads with people. It's very important. We all want to get our works out. We all want to get people to read our stuff. So that's pretty much the way it is. And so with that said, also moving on, with Black Bedsheet Books, we've got a lot of great stuff coming for the spring, not just this month, but, I mean, forever, as long as I live, I'm going to be pumping out books that I'm publishing from people. So that's a joy to me, and it's my lot in life, as C-3PO said. It's also... it inspires me. That's what I'm all about, is writing my own stuff and then publishing other people's stuff and getting the word out about their stuff and making the world a better place through our writing. And in this day and age with all the stuff going on, I even just messaged just a half an hour ago one writer that was really concerned about the stuff going on right now. And I told him what I always tell people, no matter what the circumstances are, writing is therapy. And if you fear something, write about it. And that's what horror writing is all about, is taking your fears, fictionalizing them, and putting it on paper for others to read. It not only makes great entertainment for people, but it also pours your emotions out, and just, it's a release for you. So, I'm rarely so philosophical on Francie's show, but a lot of the stuff that I've seen on Facebook and responding to today really kind of inspired me to, like, share it with you all. So, with that said, Chris Miller, are you here?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
We hear you.
Excellent.
So, I will give you over to Francie for now.
God, I'm the terrible one.
Awesome.
Hey, Chris. Oh, my gosh.
Hey.
You've done a lot of books, and Nick is always bragging about you, but I've never really had – I think this is the first time you've been on the show.
It is. It is. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, and I was scrolling through a couple of days ago, right before I asked you to be on the show, and I'm like, Chris Miller, wait, he's a Black Bedsheet Books author. Why has he never been on the show? And I asked Nick that, and Nick was even like, I don't know. Why? So
probably,
he automatically said, we were talking about it, a couple of Sundays ago, and he's like, get Chris Miller on the show. I was like, yeah, I should. Because you are a very talented writer, and you're also a part
of the
Horror Writers Association.
Yep.
Welcome, Chris.
Yeah, I am, so.
Oh, yeah,
awesome.
Let me introduce you, Tom Sawyer and William Brower.
Hey, Chris,
pleasure,
how's
guys.
It going? Thank you, man.
Doing well. Doing
how's
well.
It going tonight, man?
Oh, it's going. I'm glad I remembered about the show, actually. I got so busy today with the kids and everything. About 2 hours ago, I was like, oh, yeah, I've got to do the show tonight. So I got everybody packed into bed real fast. And anyway, so I'm here. I'm happy to be here.
Well, we're glad
we're
you made it as well,
too. Remembered. Because we've actually had guests that didn't show up, and, you know, that's always been a problem. Chris, we got a caller who I don't want to keep him on hold much longer. He's been on hold for about 20 minutes now. His name is Jacob, and he wanted to call in and say hi to you. Hey Jacob, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Hey, Chris, how's it going?
How's it going, man?
It's going good. I had a quick question for you. You're a great writer, by the way. I think you know who this is, but I was just wondering, where do you come up with your story ideas for your books? Because they're so dark and twisted, but they have a lot of twists and turns.
Yeah, so they kind of come from anywhere and everywhere. Sometimes it's something I'll see in the news that'll kind of grow into something. Other times it's just personal life experience. My first novel, A Murder of Saints, was all about a personal experience I went through at a youth group at a church I was in when I was a kid. And that whole novel sprung from that, from the what ifs. And then stuff like The Damned Place and The Damned Ones, you know, back in, I think it was 2016, when Stranger Things first came out, I had just watched the first season, and I was totally hooked. And I had also been rereading probably my favorite novel, which is It, by Stephen King. And, of course, I was in that headspace, and I was like, what about, you know, a similar coming-of-age story, but I'm going to put it in Texas, you know, in the town that I grew up in the time period I grew up in, 1990. And talk about some extraordinarily dark things. There was a lot of negative influences in my life when I was a kid from various churches we went to, and so a lot of that is evident in the book. You know, hypocrisy versus being genuine, and so on, and. And then I was like, you know, let's just push this envelope as far as it'll go. You know, I like it when things go extremely dark and make your jaw hang open. Maybe the general public at large may not always want that, but it's what I want, and I'm the one writing it, so damn it, I'm going to do it my way. They come from anywhere and everywhere.
Yeah, and I always think it's good to introduce people to different genres. I think most – like some people only read like mysteries, and then some people only read romance, but some people don't ever read horror. So I always think it's always good to have introduce people to different genres and stuff. So I was one more quick question, if I may, before I go. I was wondering how long did it take you to come up with the sequel to the damn place. Which is the damn ones. How long did it take you to come up with that sequel?
Actually, when I first started The Damned Place, the idea was it was going to be a single novel. And I was kind of thinking I was going to take the approach, sort of like the format of It, where it told it, you know, from the kid's point of view and like 1958 or whatever it was, and then them as adults in 1985. Well, mine was 1990 and 2016. And I was going to take a similar approach and tell a different kind of story, but then it just got way too big. And, you know, with printing limitations and small press and self-publishing and stuff like that, I think it's like 740 pages is what most of the printers available for people to use is at. It's like Amazon, Ingram Spark, all that. It's 740 pages. So that wasn't going to happen. But in the course of writing it, I realized, you know, I have a complete story in both the timeline of when they're kids and when they're adults. You know, so I had this massive, it was like something like 240,000 word document when I finally finished the first draft. And it was just gigantic. And I started going back through and editing and everything, and I was just like, this is just going to be too – this is too much for one book. And luckily, I had the story there for both, so I separated them. I edited each independently, and then I think what we released them somewhere around six-ish months apart. But, yeah, I actually wrote them at the exact same time.
That's awesome, because I was wondering, because I read the first book, and I'm in the middle of the second one, so I haven't quite finished it. So that, I was just curious how that worked. And I just wanted to say, I don't know who made the point in the beginning of the show about people being kind and promoting authors' work. I think that people need to do that a lot more, because social media has been a little bit negative. So I have like a Facebook group on Facebook where I like promote offers and all different types of genres. So I think that there needs to be more kindness for that area, because social media can be a brutal place for like self-published authors, I can say.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I totally agree. Kindness is way too scarce nowadays, especially online, whenever you can hold that little keyboard shield up in front of yourself. So,
yes, especially when some people don't put pictures up too, where they can just type anything. So it's kind of crazy. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to keep up the good work, and I look forward to doing stuff with you and my group in the future. So keep up the
awesome,
good work.
Awesome, man. Thank you so much.
Jacob.
So kind.
Yeah,
Jacob, one thing. Are you still there?
Yes, I'm still here.
We would love to help you what you're doing, because what you're doing is a great thing. Because you're right, social media is, you know, they're badgering everybody and politics and everything. What you're doing is actually a really good thing. And I think that maybe Liz Grabowski and William Brower, who is also, you know, author, Tom Sawyer, I'm an author, we would love to support you and your mission of what you're doing.
Yes, that would be, like, really good, because we have, like, tons of authors in our group, and we can always use more authors in our group, because what I do is we bring different authors in, and they promote their stuff, and then they do videos. It's a really good thing. Our group has about 1,700 members, and it keeps growing every day. So it's a really good group.
Excellent. And what's
the awesome
group so everyone can look for it?
The group is called Reading Corner, but there's like tons of Reading Corner groups on Facebook, but if you type in Reading Corner on Facebook, it should be the first one that pops up. It has a cover of a book, and it's like a goldish brown cover book, but it's called Reading Corner.
Awesome.
That's awesome.
We'll definitely,
I'm totally gonna check that out. And I for one am very privileged and thankful that you called the show.
Thanks so much. And also, one other thing with that group, we do like what we do is I can explain what it is, and then I'll get off. What we do is we do live chats with the authors where they come in and answer questions about their books, and then I do Facebook Live interviews with the authors of the month. Where I do that through like the Zoom app, so that way people get exposed to like different types of genres, because there's a lot of good different types of genres out there that people don't necessarily know about. And I tend to try to go after the authors that are like self-published, like Chris and like you guys, because you guys don't have the backing of like big publicity machines like the main four book publishers. So that's our goal at the Reading Corner. So yeah, you'll have to check it out. Chris is also a member of that group. So
yeah, I just shared the group with all of them.
Okay.
Just awesome. So they can all find it.
Okay, but I just wanted to say keep up the good work, and you guys are doing a great show.
Thank you so much,
thank
man.
You.
Thank you, Jacob.
Thank you for
You're
calling
welcome.
In.
Have a great night.
You too.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Ah, that's such a cool caller.
That was awesome.
I love those callers. That's
the absolute best.
That was
cool.
Yeah,
and I talked to him before because I thought that, you know, Tom was a little late calling in. Or, no, William was a little late calling in. I'm sorry, Tom.
William was a little late, just a few minutes.
And I was William, and it turned out, and he's like, no, I'm Jacob. And I'm like, okay, hi. And he mentioned you. He's like, no, I want to talk to Chris Miller tonight. So, you know, there's a guy that is paying attention to you.
Yeah, and that just, that, you know, I mean, I know there's people out there. I've got, you know, quite a few reviews, but it still just stuns me that anybody picks up anything I wrote, you know, to this day. So, it's always cool.
You write great stuff. I mean, I talked to Nick when he's reviewing books, and it takes a lot for Nick to pick up a book and say, okay, I'm going to spend my money. Because one thing that, you know, Black Bedsheet Books, there's that printing press thing where you pay them money. Nick doesn't charge money.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah, he's traditional.
Yeah, he does it out of, and he does it, and he picks these books because he's going to invest, and he definitely wanted to invest in you, and I hear him talk about you all the time.
That's awesome.
You are one of his favorite authors.
That's humbling to me.
Tom, so are you.
I know.
Okay, but you are one of
that,
the, you know, he read all these books, and I remember when he picked you out, he's like, oh, I like this book, you know?
Yeah.
And he doesn't say that every day.
I imagine
but
not.
But he does like Chris.
That's
and
great.
He believes
no, obviously,
him.
No
very
pressure if you're, since you're working on some of the new stuff.
Do what now?
I said no pressure there, since you, in case you're working on some new projects. But
yeah. I'm always working on something new. So
I can guarantee, Nick, would you publish Chris Miller again?
Hell no! No, I'm kidding.
Chris, did you forget to mail the check?
Yeah,
kind of
apparently, yeah.
I was telling Chris that you are one of his favorite authors next to Tom Sawyer.
Oh, one of my favorite authors. Chris Miller is kind of in a class by himself in a way. I mean, I kind of class authors
together with other authors in my mind anyway. And Chris is one of, like Terry Horns. He's more like Terry Horns, which is one of my favorite authors that I've published too, which is more of a, like a slasher kind of a really raw, you know, kind of in your face kind of an author, versus like a horror author that's kind of toned it down, that's for a general audience. He is more for like the Clive Barker kind of audience, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you and Chris, you and Tom, you guys don't use so many commas.
Don't overuse commas.
Oh boy.
Comma marks.
Well, they can sure trip
you.
You
know,
punctuation and spell check. So I just follow what the computer says.
Commas are too many has. H-A-T's.
He hates the commas. He hates them. You should hear. I'll be sitting here, in my, and he's like, "Oh my gosh!"
Well, fun,
I will not mention any names. He's like,
well, "Are people that think parentheses are commas?"
Yeah. Yeah, I'll hear his little punctuals, and I'm like, oh, my gosh, I feel like I'm back in college.
No, not parentheses. I'm sorry, semicolons. A lot of people think semicolons, commas, all the time.
And your dot, dot, dots, you hate those dot,
no,
dots.
No, I do. I don't mind the dot, dot, dots. My books are, the Everborn, it must have 1,000 dot, dot, dots on it. I don't mind them.
I was going to say, I have a few dot, dot, dots in both the damned books. Probably everything I've written, at least.
So. Just depends on how you use them. That's
what
all.
What I don't.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. I mean, that's why what they should do. Nick might want to consider doing this. Is also mentioning for any potential, clients to send their manuscript with a roll of antacids, please, for the editing and review process.
Yeah, that's funny. You know, the thing about the dot, dot, dots is I've been writing for a long time, since the 80s, and I've always, like, in the early days when I used to read a lot more than I do lately, because all I do is just is publish, and the greater bulk of my reading is people that submit to me, so I don't have as much of a luxury to sit down and read for pleasure like I used to, but I try. But the dot, dot, dot things, it's like, it doesn't have to, like, be three dots. It could be four or five. There's no real rule to literature that you have to, like, limit it to, like, three dots, or, like, have a space after the three, you know, all that stuff. But that's all. I see that all the time, editing and everything. It's like, just the dots, if the dots, you feel the dots are called for, it just don't make like 10,000 of them. Just, and it doesn't have to be three.
Sure.
Just to make the point.
I would say two is definitely out. Two will not work.
Yeah, two is definitely
it's gotta
out.
Be
three or more. Three to like maybe
three
six.
Something
like that.
Yeah. If for a really long pause,
they make it fair.
You know, go for six or seven.
Yeah. Yeah, something like that. Hey, say Chris, while I have the phone, do you have a religious background?
What?
I do. I was raised in a series of Protestant non-denominational churches, and
I see a little bit of that.
I kind of got away from that for a bunch of years. Then I had kids, and you know, my grandparents are still super religious. So, anyways. But I ended up actually converting to Catholicism back in 2018, I think it was. It was 2018.
That was just a couple of years ago.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
So much has happened in the last 2 years. I am religious.
Oh, okay. Okay, I was just wondering. I see a little bit of that. I used to preach in churches out of high school. My whole first half of my life was church, and my parents used to steeplechase, and it was all Protestant. A lot of Pentecostal. I even faith healed myself and put like my hands on people's foreheads at the end of church things and so. Anyway,
I've definitely witnessed a lot of that.
Yeah, I was an active participant. But
yeah.
Anyway, yeah, well, I thought a little bit about, that's why I asked, was because there seemed to be like a little kind of religious in both the Dan Place and the Dan Ones, a little bit of a kind of a religious consciousness in it.
Yeah, and especially in the Damned Ones, I mean, it's mentioned in the first one some, but the second one focuses a lot more on that. And, you know, and a lot of it's just my feelings. I got really, really, really burned at some of these churches by some of the people and the attitudes and directions that they were going, the ideas that they were trying to promote. A lot of it really didn't sit well with me, but at the same time, I do have an appreciation and respect for a genuine faith. You know, not something where you're clubbing somebody else over the head or, you know, constantly preaching fire and brimstone and, you know, if you're not in lockstep with everything I'm saying, but hypocrisy pisses me the fuck off really bad.
I mean,
yeah, I hear that.
So
yeah,
I can do
I
it, you know, in the,
I mean,
damned, in the damned
saying,
ones, I
the
kind
same
of,
thing too,
in the damned ones, it's a huge blasting of hypocritical, insane types of religion, especially within, you know, the Christian faith, you know, and you know, write what you know. I grew up in that. I saw that. I witnessed that. And there's plenty of angles to make that kind of stuff scary. So roll.
Oh yeah, it's fertile territory all around. You can never come
up
with something unoriginal when you're inspired by that kind of thing. What made you, I don't know if I was listening to a little half of it because I'm working on stuff on the computer. I don't know if anybody asked you yet, but what made you write horror versus, you know, you could be like a fantasy author or a romantic author. What made you want to write specifically horror?
I it's hard to exactly pinpoint, but one thing that I've had my entire life is I absolutely adore suspense. Like, the more suspense, the better. If you can make me need to take Xanax by the end of a book or movie, you have done me a great service. I love that stuff. And from what I was reading and watching, and again, I very conservative religious upbringing, so I wasn't able to go see all the same movies all my friends at school saw. I couldn't read. I wasn't allowed to read Stephen King until I turned 18.
Wow.
And
but hey,
Right. And now I've read pretty much his whole catalog. But anyway, so but the more suspense I could find, the more excited I got about a story. And I think it was seventh grade in the 90s, and I was at a buddy's house for his birthday party, and they had gotten their hands on a copy of Hellraiser, and I had never seen it. They also had Demon Knight and something else. Anyway. It was levels of horror I had never experienced before, and seeing those movies and getting introduced to those ideas and feeling the hair on the back of my neck standing up in certain scenes, you know, in Hellraiser when she goes down that corridor that opens up in that hospital room and that monster's charging back at her and she's trying to get out, and you know, I was just oh my God, this is freaking awesome, you know. And through horror, I discovered my love of suspense. Now, I love Tom Clancy suspense novels too, you know, military spy thrillers and such. But I always found where I got the most potent levels of suspense when it was done well was in horror, and that's kind of what led me in that direction. I call myself a suspense author, not necessarily a horror author, because I do both. I do thrillers and horror and suspense. But everything I write is, it has to fundamentally be a suspense story to keep me interested.
Yeah, you know, I've come to learn that there's an amount of horror in everything, even in Lifetime television movies. Because, even domestic relationship type, stuff where people have affairs and it doesn't have to include vampires or werewolves or anything, but that in itself is a type of horror. There's a type of horror that you can find in any conflict, in any kind of fiction.
Mm-hmm.
As long as there's conflict, there's terror, there's suspense, there's thrills that make you want to go, okay, there's a villain, there's a good guy. Even there's some horror in Star Wars, too.
Because
people die, and when people die, there's horror. There's a villain inflicting pain on somebody. That in itself is horror. With horror literature, it expands on that to make the whole thing kind of that animal. It's kind of like all inclusive with how we live and perceive things, and you can find horror in just about everything. And I'm of the opinion that that us horror writers that are more inclined towards horror kind of just use that as an accordion and expand it to all kinds of other realms. Like I've talked to Clive Barker about that too. Back when he was kind of mentoring me a while ago, which was cool, and that's a whole other animal. But it's just that's like I was talking about with church and everything. I wrote the book for Halloween 4, but in junior high school, I was against people that saw those movies. Because of the old Jesus church thing and stuff. And it was just a bad thing. You have to have positive thoughts, not negative thoughts like horror does. And everything. It's all Satan.
I got so much of that same kind of attitude, because I've been writing since I was, very young, but I only started publishing in 2017. And I'd come up with these ideas, and sometimes I wouldn't even write it out. Sometimes I'd just say, oh, what about this? How cool would this be? And then I'd just go like pitch black dark on something, and I've got all these gaping maws staring at me like, oh, my God. And, of course, they were Protestants, so they didn't make the sign of the cross, but they were just, basically holding their fingers to their mouth and saying, how can you have a relationship with God if you're thinking of such evil things? It's not real. It's not actually evil when it's made up, right? Like, oh, I totally did. And so there was a lot of that going on because, I'm also a musician, and I used to play on their bands. They have all the lights and it's almost like a rock show on Sunday mornings. And, I played the lead guitar for them for years and stuff, and it was just like anytime I would bring any of that up, it was just such an instant – I don't even know how to describe it. I mean, it was certainly judgment, but it was just it was so oppressive that I was terrified of really exploring a lot of those ideas for a lot of time until I got out of there. So I'm glad I did.
Yeah, me too. I know exactly how you feel. I wanted to be a Christian rock star back in the day. I was totally into Keith Green. If you've heard of him, Randy Stonehill, and some of those were my idols growing up in the early 80s. I wanted to do that thing. And I was in conflict with my, tendencies to want to do the horror stuff. I was a closet horror enthusiast even with that, horror is just, people in, like you were talking about, that were putting their hands to their mouths and stuff. They experience horror every day at home, more likely than not, maybe not every day, but there's always conflict. There's always what is this neighbor doing? I'm pissed off about what they're doing with the fence. I'm doing this and that. And that's the advice that I give to writers, too, sometimes, is where do you get your ideas? Well, from life, even from something as simple as that.
Yeah.
And werewolves and vampires and demons from other dimensions and stuff, like in The Damned Ones. they're just something that we experience that we just we put on paper as something different, but it's representative. Of just life.
It's the symbolism.
That's what horror is all about. But, you know, and you do that, and with your work, too, and Tom's, and a lot of authors that I'm exposed to, because you know I'm all about horror literature and everything is the purveyance of all of that. It's just something as simplistic, and then you put it on paper and you distort it. Like werewolves aren't real, as far as we know. Mm-hmm. I mean, people can actually turn into that, mm-hmm. like an American Werewolf in London, as far as we know.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's an expression. It's something that's on paper, like if a school bully pisses you off, that really wreaks havoc on your life and stuff, you put it on paper as a werewolf, then there you have it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, and people like that in your life are, you know, in one way, just sort of a vampire. They suck not only your joy, but your happiness and your willingness to do things and be in certain areas. If people are being bullied, it's just like all the life is drained right out of them at some point when nothing is done about it.
There's a lot of toxic people.
And that's it's so easy for me as an author to see that as a vampire and to easily, you know, be able to create something from that.
Yeah.
Exactly. And I've always said, I've said it so often that it's a cliche, but the school shooters, if they wrote about it on paper instead of doing it, then they have a book instead of killing people and being in prison,
absolutely, yeah.
Yes, writing is therapy, especially horror writing. If you're so inclined,
I agree with you on that, Nicholas. Because I agree with you on that, Nicholas. Because sometimes I use characters that are patterned after real people that have. Basically have shit on me in the past and I haven't forgot. So, you know, you got a few of the common barrier names that I reuse over again as first name anyways, and his last name sounding like it. And it's very therapeutic to kill off or maim or mutilate somebody that really pissed you off in the past. I mean,
make it epic.
Yeah.
It's a lot like what Taylor Swift does in a way.
Yeah.
Even though that's not a horror, but I mean, she writes about ex-boyfriends and everything. But it's all creativity and it's all like expression and taking things out of your life and putting them on paper and stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, even ex-girlfriends for mine with my writing and stuff, I get like a release by creating them as characters in stories. And have them killed off or just things that piss me off in my real life. Like I said, writing is therapy. It's the whole nine yards. It doesn't even have to be that necessarily. You could even make things up out of your butthole. You can have a dream that has nothing to do with your life and wake up and go, hey, that would make a great book too. Chris. So you play guitar.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. How good are you?
Yeah.
Would you say?
Oh, I would classify myself as intermediate at best. You know, I mean, I can solo a little bit. I can run a few scales, but I don't practice every day anymore. I used to for years, but I'm okay. I'm not going to blow anybody away.
On a scale of like say Hendrix to Page, I guess are you kind of on the in between, maybe like a Stevie Ray?
Okay, so on a scale of legends, I can't even approach that scale.
Oh, okay.
I'd probably be more in line with something like the what's his name? Of course, now I'm going to forget about it. But anyway, the guy from Disturbed. I mean, I might could play on some on a level like that, but I couldn't approach Jimmy.
I bet you can play Wipeout.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Who can?
I used to play piano too back when I wanted to be a Christian singer and stuff. I used to play piano, write original songs and stuff. It's funny because some of the, especially like John Skip and Craig Spector, they had their own band, and even Craig Spector nowadays, he still like does music and stuff. Some of the, even Stephen King, I used to go back in the day, back in the early 90s, and see the Rock Bottom Remainders, and he would like be up there center stage with his guitar singing Sea of Love. So a lot of like horror writers seem to be a little bit musically inclined sometimes. So that's I was curious about that too, about how far that went with you.
That was that was my sole outlet for writing for probably close to a decade, because I had just started writing a few short stories, and something I was taking seriously, not 10 years old making up some BS on a piece of paper, but actually trying to write a short story. I'd written a handful. I ended up married, that just didn't seem to mesh well with my writing. Anytime I'd try to do that, it seemed to cause a conflict. However, I could play music all I wanted and write songs all I wanted, and we didn't have that conflict, so I did that for a long time. And finally, when that fell apart, I went back to writing these stories again, and that's when it all sort of really started to flourish. I guess that was probably 2014-ish, and then a few years later, I finally got published, and here we are. So
that's good.
What was the first thing that you ever got published?
A Murder of Saints. That was my first novel. And the first thing I'd ever published at all, actually.
Published. Before that, no short stories, just a full novel right
no
off the
short
bat.
I dove straight into
that's
a 450-page novel, man.
That's
good,
awesome.
Good.
Awesome.
Yeah, I went in deep first. I started that back in, 2008 and wrote all but maybe the last three chapters of the first draft, and wasn't able, for whatever reason at the time, I was not able to finish it, and that whole thing with the ex-wife happened, and so it was years and years and years that thing sat incomplete, and then I finally found myself single again and time on my hands, and I could do whatever the hell I wanted, so I started writing again and finished that book in first draft, and of course it was about 8 more drafts from that point until I got to where I was happy enough to publish it. Luckily nowadays I don't tend to need that many drafts, but that was my first book, and it had been started so long ago. There was a kid who had started writing it and a grown man who came to finish it, and I had to get it all polished up. So
yeah, but that's the first one is always your baby anyways, because I always think that that's where your full passion actually is bared for everybody. So
absolutely my I bled all over those pages.
I can imagine.
Mm-hmm.
So. But at the end of the day, though, that's what makes it pay itself off,
Absolutely. Yeah. I look back at it now and I'm like, I see a little problem here and there and everything. And it's like, but you know what? It's been out for nearly 3 years, and I honestly wouldn't change a thing in the world about it. It's just like your kid. Even with all their flaws, you think they're perfect. And that's kind of where I am,
So what are you working on now, Chris?
Right now, I've got a couple of projects. One is with a
fellow writer M. Enenbach and Patrick C. Harrison III, who is one of the owners of Death's Head Press. The three of us are doing a little anthology together. We all came up with a prompt and each wrote a short story for that. So it'll be 9 short stories. That's we're slated to try to have that out by the time KillerCon comes around, if there's still going to be a KillerCon with all this coronavirus stuff. But and then me and Mike Enenbach are also working together on an epic science fiction cosmic horror story that is going to be at least 3 books, possibly 4 or 5. The Thing, Alien, Event Horizon, and some of its own shit all rolled into one really, really epic scale story. So we're really excited about that. We've been working on it for close to a year, but we kind of got sidetracked with this other project, but we're about to be diving back into it and getting that finished up. So hopefully maybe by the end of the year, early next year, we'll have that finished and ready to sub.
Well, that's cool.
If you don't mind taking requests,
if it's possible,
sure.
Would you be able to try to incorporate maybe anything off of The Black Hole, Disney's dark attempt at Star Wars?
Oh, my God, I love that movie.
Me too.
I just watched that a few weeks ago. I got Disney Plus for my kids. And it was on there, and I was like, I can't believe this. I haven't seen this since I was a kid, and I watched it, and the robots were super cheesy and everything, but the ending was so freaking dark. I was like, that's awesome. I love Black Hole, anything outer space. I asked my wife. She's always leaving the room to go watch TV elsewhere because I'm turning on these ridiculous science fiction – or not science fiction, but just outer space documentaries with – all these leading scientists interviews all the time because it just fascinates me. And she's just like, I don't give one shit. Never mind two. I'm out. You know?
That's what I do with Nick too. Like, oh, you got to see this. And I'm like, oh, really? No. No.
Do I have to?
Back home.
I'm going to go watch... Catfish or Dance
How
Moms
many real
or
housewives
King,
do I have
King
to
of the
endure?
Hill.
I want to learn about Neptune, you know?
Yes.
But...
well, you know that they actually finally, it only took 40 years, but they finally released the soundtrack to it.
for the Black Hole?
Yeah, better
wow.
than ever.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, my wife's in the same way because I got my copy last week and it's still sitting in rotation. So she's had to deal with it for 40 some odd hours.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
You know, but the things we do for love, you know.
No, absolutely.
No,
hey,
the things
sit down
that women
watch
do.
The Real
love.
Housewives.
Oh, I love you, but
through.
I'm going to go into the other room now.
Yeah.
I'm going to go in the other room now, and you can watch that, and I'll see you in the morning. My jerk. Honestly, that's the women's opinion.
Especially when you hear the famous phrase of tonight on Turner Classic Films, we have 1969's 2001 A Space Odyssey, directed by Stanley Kubrick.
And how to lose your wife in a different room.
That's why God made us for TV. So that we can stay together.
Tell me, do your wife still say, I love you, and they'll give you little kisses. I'm going to go in the other room now, jerks.
Oh, yeah.
That's what we're really
doing. Oh, yeah. It's not necessarily a daily occurrence, but almost.
next time you watch those science fiction things, watch your wife. She'll be, that smile will be gone.
Mm-hmm.
And she's going to say, oh, yeah. I'm going to go in the next room. I love you. I'm out of here.
But that's how you take a picture. You know, you grab the phone, you take a picture, and then you've got visual reference for the female antagonist for the next book that you might be working on sometime down the road.
There you go.
Gold!
The woman who never says she's mad at you, but she wants to wring your neck.
Oh, she has no problem letting me know when she's
she will
not happy.
Kill you in the Black Widow. She will kill you in your sleep.
Yes.
Yes, she will.
Yeah. Do you let your
sleep
wife
with
wipe your
night
your
stuff the morning after?
Do what?
Yeah. The proverbial, be prepared for the morning after.
See, you guys got your book. There's your next book or short story.
Perfect.
Because it's going to be short because she's just going to kill you.
Yeah. Yep.
Do you let your wife read your stuff? Does that give you an indicator? I mean, does she give you a barometer on how you think it's going to be?
I have always offered for her to read some stuff, and I have, and she has read a few snippets. She read not quite a full chapter out of. I've got a what's called a splatter western coming out in May from Deathshead Press. Actually ties into these Damned books, as a matter of fact. So there's a fun crossover, and but anyway, so I written this scene and. It was both absolutely horrifying, but I was trying to mock the villain of the scene and make it also funny. So I was like, I need somebody to just bounce this off of. And I read it to her, you know, and she thought it was funny. And she was like, kind of a little bit like, oh my God, you know, at the direction the scene had been going. But she enjoyed it. She's read a couple other things, but, you know, we've got a toddler, an 8-year-old, and a 10-year-old in the house, and so she doesn't have
a lot of
time
to read.
Herself to just sit down and read. So, hopefully in the future when these kids are all wiping their own butts and taking care of themselves a little more, she'll have a little more time to herself to do some reading.
Yeah, and
yeah,
it'd probably be a safe bet to say that.
Really.
Some of the books might be not bedtime stories just yet.
Oh, no, they're certainly not.
No,
this is best read first thing in the morning with the sun shining.
That,
best way
that
to do
is
it anyway,
a pretty
for,
good question that is asked right there, and maybe Tom and William, and, you know, you're presenting something that you wrote to someone that you love and you want to spend the rest of your life with, is it scary? Or are they going to say, oh, there's too many commas. Oh, why is this period here?
My wife's brutally honest about it. It's mostly the storyline. She's brutally honest. So, you know, she'll tell me, you got to change
mine.
This first chapter, or you got to change this, or, you know, and she reads a lot. She's always has. So, you know, so.
Yeah, and I bounce ideas off my wife all the time, you know, to the point that sometimes she'll start to get a little bit like, you know, but she takes the time and she'll listen to my idea and then say, okay, this part of that works, but I don't like this. What if you did this instead? And then suddenly I'll be like, oh my gosh, I got a new story here. And, you know, it's just because picking her brain. That happened with Dust, which is my splatter western. They approached me. I had published once with them before. And they said, hey, we got this series coming up, splatter westerns, blah, 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 blah. Here's the details. Do you want to have a spot in this? And at first I was like, man, I'm not really sure. I don't know how to do a western. I've never thought about that, blah, blah, blah. I bounced it off my wife. And then she said, and then she gave me the title. She's like, whatever your story is, it's going to be called Dust. And she's like, and you can absolutely do this. And then we talked for a little while, and all of a sudden this story built itself around the title she gave me, and the ideas we were bouncing off, and suddenly I had a new novel, and it was terrific. You know,
nice.
But, just crazy how that happens sometimes.
I had an idea for a novel called Dust, too, but...
Yeah, but that's how you know you strike when the iron's hot, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it's always the best way of handling those things, that's for sure.
Absolutely.
Hey, Chris, I have to admit, I have a little bit different background than you on the Christian thing. I went to church every Sunday, but fortunately for my parents, I guess I would say a little more liberal in my reading because my dad had, he had like books like Hiroshima down in the basement on a shelf, and me being curious, I read that when I was in elementary school, and my mom, she was a bad influence because she liked to stay up late and watch the horror movies that were on the late shows, and she'd get me up to say, well, I missed you all day, I was at work. That was her excuse to say that she was too scared to watch them by herself. So
well,
they kind of
cool.
badly influenced me.
That's funny that
4, 5,
that
and 6.
I grew up in probably not Jehovah's Witnesses, but I'm kind of up there. I don't want to say what religion because I don't want to talk religion on the show. But I grew up very, very religious. And when I was 8 years old, The Exorcist came on HBO in 1980.
Classic.
Mom had HBO, and my mom made me watch The Exorcist with her. And I was like, I love this movie. And I was hooked on horror flicks ever since. And my mom's like, I don't think I did a good thing.
Well, I mean, you can always improvise, especially for people that are not too familiar with the genre or the film.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way that I've dealt with some of my sheltered friends. I was like, listen, we're going to watch a movie. It's really wonderful. I think you're going to like it. This is going to be right up your alley. This is about a mother who's coming to terms with her daughter just coming into puberty. It's called Carrie. Perfect. Okay, let's watch it.
Okay, so how do you explain the crucifixion?
Very, very carefully.
Yeah. That was one restriction I had. My mom wouldn't let me watch The Exorcist when it first came out.
What are cocks?
I had to wait a year.
Yeah, you kind of look at your mom. What are cocks? Why is
Exorcism
in hell?
Yeah, Exorcist is even easier.
Just
it's more of the troubled single mother trying to raise her daughter. daughter's finally schizophrenic, has a little bit of a mental issue.
What are cocks and why? And, you know, you're thinking, I grew up in South Carolina, it's Carolina Gamecocks, okay. So she's sucking... You know.
Yeah, the Carolina Gamecocks.
Yeah.
It was a bad season at that time when
now?
They were filming it.
Yeah, see?
I have to admit, The Exorcist didn't bother me as much when I was young as when I got older. I don't know why. Maybe it's because I lived a little bit, but when I was younger, it didn't scare me at all. Now it's like, when I got older, it's like, damn, this is a terrifying movie. You know, maybe a gruesome
first
sense
time
when I got
saw
older.
That was the re-release in theaters, like in the early 2000s.
Oh my gosh.
That was the first time I actually saw it.
When they did the director's.
Yeah.
Yeah, the director's cut.
And I remember there was some friends
upstairs.
Of mine.
Did that not creep everyone out? Even watching it in the previews,
God,
and she did
terrifying.
It, and you're like, ah!
Yeah.
Even though you watched the movie, did you still not see the preview in the movie theaters and go, oh! I did.
I don't recall that.
And I was the assistant manager of the movie theaters, and I was watching the preview, and it was like, oh!
That's the way to do
Everybody's
it, though.
Everybody's going to look at me. I'm going to leave now. Bye. Yeah, we're going to have this movie playing in our theater in 2 weeks. Can't wait to see you.
But hey, think hey, at least they never made that film in 3D. That would have been even more awesome.
Oh
Jesus!
Gosh,
oh, imagine the puking scene in 3D.
Imagine the pea green soup it had to come out of in 3D.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Jesus, that'd be a mess.
Oh man, that would have been. You know what we got to do is we got to constantly email the distributor of The Exorcist and say, please make it in 3D now. Please make it in 3D now.
We'll be your best
friend. I think people would ignore the coronavirus, and I think they would rush to the theaters to see The Exorcist in 3D.
I would.
Would too. It's like coronavirus, what?
Yeah, no, give me fever for a week. I'm going.
I'll take 14 days in isolation.
Sure. I like
that. Just put me in a nice place with a nice view, you know.
Yeah, there you go. Bring a Snickers. You might not be going anywhere for a while.
Yeah.
Right.
Nick, would you agree? Would you see The Exorcist in 3D?
No, I would rather see something that's more horrific than The Exorcist. The Exorcist isn't horrific for me. It's
dude, you're
going to
get puked on by pea soup.
The thing is about The Exorcist is it originates from Catholicism and exorcism, and that there can be somebody, there's such a thing as somebody being possessed by a demon that a priest has to exorcise. And all that is a little bit less sensational to me than, say, a contagion or werewolves or vampires that seem to me more surreal and more, you know, because I still believe if there's demons to this day, as long as you believe in the right thing, then they have no power over you. I mean, that's one of the things from my past that still exists in my head. My essence today, The Exorcist was more of an exploitation of profanity and a demon that can do crazy things that make you scared, which in itself is fantastic, but it doesn't scare me really.
Oh, come on, Eileen Deeds.
It's just cool. It's just cool to me.
Eileen Deeds' face coming right at you. Right there.
But it's
okay, so Nick, what are your thoughts on Stigmata from 2000?
Oh, don't.
That was
creepy. Stigmata, that was with Gabriel Byrne, right?
Yeah, I think he was in that one too. He was in two of them. He was in End of Days.
End of Days, and I think Stigmata.
I love Gabriel Byrne. Give me anything that Gabriel. Nick, step outside real quick.
Uh-oh, here we go.
Hey, Nick, the only thing more frightening and terrifying than.
Gabriel.
You get like one of those funny feelings like when you climb the rope in gym class? One of those types of things that we're trying to say?
That's how you think about when you watch Gabriel Byrne and, you know, especially Stigmata.
Yeah. You know, Nick, I think the only thing more terrifying and horrifying than The Exorcist is probably Rosie O'Donnell in a thong.
Well, Tom, you know, she's down here in South Florida, so if I see her on the beach, I'll take a picture for you and go, hey, what if she's feeling really scary?
Oh, my God.
I think I got a barf.
How do you go from America's Sweetheart to America's Most Hated, like, overnight?
Very carefully.
Yeah.
Rosie O'Donnell got the handbook.
I had to throw that.
That was actually a good one. That was a good one.
Sorry, guys.
Definitely.
I had to have
that
one. Yeah, I got a warped sense of humor, but then again, I'm a horror writer, so what can I say?
That's all right, you know. It's the nature of the beast.
We laugh louder than the clown.
Yeah.
But hey, that's the way to do it. I mean,
that's because we get to brutally. Well, Chris.
But then, like I said, I'm that guy that I had an ex friend that I've killed off or mutilated at least 3 times in stories and books. So, felt good about doing it too. I'm that way.
Nothing wrong with that.
Chris,
Chris, yeah, believe,
by the
I mean,
way,
I,
you and your wife are like Ken and Barbie.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, come on. You guys are so cute. Come on. Tom, William, you've seen the photos. Aren't they adorable?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I guess.
Definitely very, very cute, man.
We're cute and cool.
Precious.
No. She looks like an absolute model, but she can drink you under the table and eat like 30 wings at one time. So she's also cool to hang out with, you know? So I hit the absolute jackpot with her.
Well, you definitely, you know the internet right there, you know?
Is she awake right now? I bet she's awake.
No, she's not. She had surgery earlier this week, so she's kind of resting up, and she's already in bed.
Oh.
Well, please wish her the best for us.
I was going to, until you said surgery, I was going to say, well, then wake her up and say, hey, say hey. But no, don't do that.
Otherwise we're going to see. We don't need the Exorcist 4.
I certainly don't want it here.
Precisely. You don't want to hear why did you put me on this phone with these strange people?
We're weird.
We
need you around to write the books more.
Blog Talk Radio is about to bring that British woman on to say that we are now officially off the air, and I want you, sorry I had to burp, Chris, to go ahead and tell us where everybody can find you on social media.
So on social media, you can find me on Facebook. I have a Facebook page. It's Chris Miller Author, or Author Chris Miller. I forget at the moment. It's one of those. Look me up. I still haven't gotten to 5,000 friends, so you can still friend me on Facebook. I'm on Twitter at CM Wordslinger, Instagram at Chris Miller Author. My website is authorchrismiller.com. It's not totally up to date, but I am in process of that, and there's links to everything there and ways to contact me, and all my social media on the contact page is there. So just a click away once you get to the website.
Well, cool.
Okay, and do you have any upcoming
Chris?
Oh, wait.
I'm sorry.
I'm glad we didn't scare you away.
No.
Always next time.
Do you have any upcoming
novels that you're looking forward to?
Of mine, Dust is coming out in May from Death's Head Press. It's a splatter western, and it does tie into The Damned Place and The Damned Ones, with a fun little crossover there. So that could be exciting for people who already read those, but it'll also stand alone on its own as well. And then the anthology I'm writing with the other two authors, it's going to be Cerberus something, maybe Cerberus Rising. We haven't decided yet, but that's coming later this year. I'm also very excited about that.
Nice.
Excellent.
And look,
well, we're definitely looking forward to it as well.
Awesome, awesome.
Nick, you want to say anything goodbye?
I appreciate
Nick's
you
coming.
Guys having me on here. This was fun.
Yeah, Nick's
well,
coming.
Anytime,
he wants
Chris.
To speak
anytime at
else.
All.
I'm on my way. Oh. I'm on my way. I'm coming. Here, okay. There I go. It's a long ways. Okay, bye. I'm kidding.
Bye.
It was really good to have that conversation with all of you, and especially with Chris. And onwards and upwards, Chris. You've got a, like I think I told you on Facebook at some point or other, you've got a great future ahead of you.
Thank you.
Cool.
That means a lot.
Congratulations,
that
Chris.
Means a lot. Thank you.
Yeah, and
keep going,
Chris.
Keep it up.
Next time you're in the area, you better make fucking sure that you come see me.
Absolutely. You know what? If I had realized, it didn't dawn on me how close I was to you when I was up there. So
you were very close. I even looked it up. I looked it up because you told me what place you were eating at. So I looked it up.
Mm-hmm.
No, not Citrus Heights. He was in, I forgot where now. But it wasn't far.
Right down the road.
Yeah. Yeah, please do. Yeah, please do.
Yeah,
I know that
when I
wrote you, it was like you were leaving the next morning and stuff, so I totally understood
right.
that. But, you know, next time you see your cousin, look me up.
Absolutely. Hey, we're planning a trip probably next year with the whole family, so I'll definitely be there for a longer chunk of time. We can definitely get together.
Awesomeness, awesomeness.
Excellent. Can't go wrong
and,
there.
And if this coronavirus
nope.
thing blows over and everything is good by, say, next October, next Halloween, any of you authors are welcome to come over here and take part in our Halloween extravaganza, give away free books to crowds of people. So last year,
cool.
Fred Weehy and Raina Young were here, and it was awesome. I'm a little concerned about the present climate, but it probably might blow over by fall. And so any of you, Tom and Chris, you're welcome to, come by, and you'll
cool,
have,
thanks.
Like, a bunch of books for free to give away. So, you know,
excellent.
Just keep that in mind.
Yeah,
so anyway, yeah, okay, I'll give it over to Francie, and we'll all of us talk later. Awesome show. And
yeah, very awesome.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you. Very cool. Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah, this
well,
was
absolute
a good
blast.
Show. And Chris, totally, whenever you're ready to come back on the show, email me. Say, hey, I got this coming out. Can I be on the show?
Absolutely, I will do it.
All right,
absolutely.
Don't be shy.
I'd love to come back.
Yeah. And just keep us in the loop in general, too.
Absolutely, yeah.
Cool.
100%.
Yeah.
All right. Who's ready to listen to some Willie Nelson?
All right, this is time
works
to roll,
for me, I guess.
Yep.
Rock and roll.
Yeah, all right. We got some.
Okay, good night, everyone.
Coming on. Hold on. Okay, here we go.
Woke up this morning looking for my shoes. Looked behind the trunk, found the hesitation blues. Lordy, tell me how long.
Lordy, tell me how long.
Will I have to wait?
Will I have to wait?
Can I get you now?
Can I get you now?
Must I hesitate? Blues overtake me, rock away from here. Lordy, tell me how long.
Lordy, tell me how long.
Will I have to wait?
Will I have to wait?
Can I get you now?
Can I get you now?
Must I hesitate? hesitate. Sit right down. If the blues overtake me, I'll jump in and drown. Lord, they tell me how long.
Lord, they tell me how long.
Will I have to wait?
Will I have to wait?
Can I get you now?
Can I get you now?
Must I hesitate?
Good night, everybody.